I live in a constant state of severe pain and total darkness. The monster is my only constant companion. In this episode, we'll be discussing sensitive topics, suicide, and euthanasia. If this is triggering for you, please, please don't listen until you are ready.
Sometimes realize there's no way.
You have tuned into Breaking the Mask of Depression with your host, Diva with Depression.
Hey everybody, welcome to Breaking the Mask of Depression with me, your host, the Diva with Depression. I hope everyone is doing well. I hope that, I don't know, some people are getting hot weather, other people are getting storms, so I hope wherever you are, you're safe and healthy and peaceful. I hope the eclipse, I missed it. I probably slept through it, but I hope the eclipse, what is the eclipse supposed to do? Like, I don't know, but I hope it brought you some good luck. Yesterday was World Semicolon Day. And for those that don't know, World Semicolon Day means that your story is not over. And that is one of the subjects, well, actually, the main subject that we're going to talk about today. But first, let me add some other things, because there's a whole bunch of stuff going on this month. It's National Minority Health Month, not Mental Health Month, Health Month. So that means that you all have to get your asses to the doctor, get your tests done, get your blood work done, make sure everything is working. And if it isn't working, put some oil on it and get it going, because we're losing too many of, what do we just lost? Mr. C at 52 from diabetes and kidney complications. And we lost another music executive last week, 52, with the same thing. Get to the doctor, Black people. Get to the doctor. It's Stress Awareness Month. So that means that we have to lower our stress. I don't know how to do that, so don't ask me. But just be aware if you're stressed, and then be aware of how to fix it. I don't know, some people say breathe in, breathe out, do yoga, whatever. Whatever it takes, do it. Autism Acceptance Month. I have an amazing baby. And so shout out to my autistic community. Love you guys. And Sexual Assault Awareness Month. And I want to say that I believe survivors, and I know what it feels like to not be heard and not be listened to and be called a liar. So believe survivors until you know everything, because you don't know what they went through. You don't know what it's like to be assaulted, abused sexually. So be kind and listen. So I have a special guest today. One of my favorite co-hosts is here today, and she's also a major part of the Diva with Depression platform. She's on the board, because you know we have a board. So welcome, my pumpkin number one.
Hi.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on and indulging your mommy. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Yes. My name's Toni. And like she said, I'm pumpkin number one. The best one there is.
Toni is the one that brought me into this amazing hood called motherhood. So
the best pumpkin.
We can't say the best pumpkin. Now, the baby pumpkin was supposed to be here, but she's working and she's running the streets, and you know, we can't keep up. I don't know.
Running the streets. That's how rumors get started. She's in school.
So, like I said, yesterday was World Semicolon Day.
Can you explain that some more?
I had it written down, but her name is Audrey Babel. And she came up with the saying that I have it written down, so I'm going to tell you. She came up with World Semicolon Day is a day that recognizes suicide survivors and aims to raise awareness and offer support for all those who are experiencing mental health challenges. The semicolon is a representation of choosing not to die by suicide, since it indicates a separation of two clauses rather than the end of a clause. So semicolon now represents perseverance and hope. And what is, I don't know where I got that other name from, Amy Bluewell. She said, authors use semicolons when a sentence could end, but they choose to continue it. Through the semicolon project, we are saying you are the author. The sentence is your life and you are choosing to continue.
That's the best thing I've ever heard. Okay, I've ever heard today. That really is good. No, that really is. I didn't know that that was a thing.
Yeah, and I, you know, like though. I know some people have it tattooed on them. If I ever get the balls to get a tattoo, I said that I would do it. But I know one person told me, I know one person personally that has it on their wrist. And a lot of people get it on their wrist. And that's a sign also, you know. That brings us to what we're going to talk about today. And I want to say before we get started that I know that suicide and dying by suicide is a very touchy subject for some. So if this is triggering for you, you can leave and I won't be offended. Listen at another time. Don't listen, but I don't want anybody to be triggered because of this subject. But it is something that we have to talk about. So, Tony. Yeah. We started talking about this last week. So People Magazine had the article that a woman 28 years old is opting for euthanasia rather than living with mental illness. And, you know, no, everybody doesn't know about the three of us in our coffee clutches, but we got in, you know, we started discussing this last week because 28 years old is very young. You know, to want to, I don't know, euthanasia, of course, as far as we know it, as far as I know it, is assisted death because of a terminal illness. And it used to be illegal. And so now it's legal, like in the Netherlands and Canada, in Canada, it's for physically ill. And they were supposed to start this year accepting mentally ill patients, people, but they are delaying it until 2027. So before we get into it, I'm going to give you the Google fact of today. Euthanasia, the practice of ending the life of a patient to limit the patient's suffering. And suffering, Tony, I think is the key word.
It is, because everyone has a different definition of suffering. So I think, I'm not going to say that I'm torn about this topic, because I think I know where I stand, but I can understand both sides, I think. It's hard to not put my personal feelings into it.
Well, why wouldn't you? This is a personal show. Say what you gotta say.
Like I said, I think suffering can mean a lot of things. So I think particularly with this issue, when it comes to mental health, it's more of just something that I think is still very common, and that's just we don't see it. So because it's not a physical illness or disability, it's very hard for us to rationalize the thought of it being considered suffering and so bad that you want to voluntarily end your life. So
exactly. And I don't think, and you know, my whole platform is about the darkness that I'm in every minute of every day. And I still don't think that as many of us that talk about how dark it is and how painful it is, people still don't get how painful it is to live with your brain fighting you. It's like your brain wants to leave, but your body has to stay. And it's just a constant battle, you know, between good and evil. And so
and I think you have, oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. And so, like you said, when people see to think of suffering, they just think of people with physical illnesses. They don't think of me as suffering.
I really do think, unfortunately, that it is something that people have to go through to truly understand.
Yeah.
To get to a point where it is so dark, like so unbearable that you want to end your life. I think that people really have it. I don't want anybody to experience that, but there's just no way that you can know unless you've been in that mindset or maybe even extremely close to someone in that mindset. So, but I think that we should first talk about the article and the lady. Because,
but first I want to let everyone know, and you don't have to be specific, but the reason why I wanted you guys to have this discussion with me on the show is because we're in the throes of it, and right. We've been in the throes of it. And so I just want, and I share this all the time, that both of my daughters have some form of mental illness in different stages. And so that is why I just wanted to share that. That is why, you know, we are having this discussion about suffering. Oh, yeah. and ending suffering and pain. So
yeah.
What do you think?
I mean,
you don't have to be specific.
No. And I don't mind being specific. I'll just say that it is something that I dealt with. It's something that I still deal with. Unfortunately, I have been in that mindset before, more than once. And I'm grateful and blessed to have come out on the other side of that, or at least working to try to get on the other side of that. Well, I won't even discredit getting on the other side of that. But I also know that some people are not that fortunate. Some people don't have the support that they need. So when it comes to topics like this, again, it's hard for me not to put my personal feelings into it because I truly do understand. And I cannot say for 100% certainty that if this was an option to me, you know, back when I was going through these hard times, that I wouldn't at least consider it. So I think that's just how I feel about it.
Thank you. And like I said, your personal feelings are important, because if we don't start to share some of our personal feelings, experiences, testimonies, then we're not getting the word out there enough to let people know that they're not by themselves. You know, that there are millions of us living with this. So let's get down to the nitty gritty.
I know.
A 28-year-old woman in the Netherlands has opted to end her life with euthanasia instead of continuing to live with her mental illness. And she's, like I said, she's 28. And this article was published on April 1st. It doesn't give a date when, you know, she's going to.
I think they said early May.
Oh, early May. Okay. Now, and she's living with depression, autism, and borderline personality disorder. So she says that she was always very clear that if it didn't get better, she can't do it anymore. So what?
She's suffering.
She's got a boyfriend. She's got two cats. You know, so it's not like she's alone. And so I guess, you know, some people will say that, you know, oh, well, she must be lonely or she must be by herself or something. No, she has a loving environment. But she's suffering. I don't know anything about autism, you know, as far as being in that space. Mm-hmm. I know about depression, the severe depression that I have, which is brutal. And I know from research that borderline personality disorder is brutal also.
Yeah. You know,
especially if it's not controlled.
So, and I don't think, isn't borderline personality disorder, I think there's medications that help with it, but I still think it's fairly, there's no, other than like behavioral therapy or something like that. Right. So that probably is debilitating in itself. And as far as her support system, I'm sure that's why she stayed as long as she did. Most people are out here living for others instead of themselves. They just don't want to hurt those around them. So it's sad. And you know, now that I'm thinking about it, I don't know what the boyfriend thinks.
Like, it doesn't even say anything about, I mean, she's already discussed with him. She said that she's going to be cremated and her boyfriend chose the spot to scatter her ashes. So, you know, I guess that this is, you know, they've discussed it and, you know, that they are going to come up with a plan. She said that she is going to be on her couch and, you know, so she'll be at home. And I'm guessing that, you know, he'll be there for it. You know, I can't imagine. Yeah, I can't imagine watching that. But then again, you know, we watch loved ones pass away. Like, people do it every day.
That's
like
what
when
I
you
think.
Go to the hospital.
You see that all the time. And I'm wondering if this would be the same discussion if she was 82 instead of 28. Like, is it, do you have to suffer for 82 years to be able to make that decision? Because I know a big part of it is her age, that people feel that she's too young to make this decision. But I mean, 28 years is a long time to have to deal with that, I'm just saying. And it seems, from what I've read, and like her quotes, it seems like it's something that she's come to peace with. It's something that she has thought a lot about. It also said, like, her psychiatrist said that there was nothing more that they could do.
And people don't believe that.
Well, just based on her diagnosis, we said that the borderline personality disorder has nothing to do but really therapy. Autism therapy, more like behavioral or cognitive therapy. And then depression, I mean, there's only so many depression meds and treatments that you can go through. So I probably believe that she said that the psychiatrist said that.
And people, you know, people don't understand. I was reading comments and, you know, well, she needs to get a new doctor. Well, that doctor needs to be fired. I've been told that there's nothing that they can do for me. I've been told that this is what I'm going to live with for the rest of my life. Because there is no cure for mental illness. You like you said, the medicine, the therapy. And I will shorten it and say that my first major visit to therapy was right after I had you. So 25. Mm-hmm. And now 30 years later, I'm still in this. You know, so that's 30 years. You know, she's 28 years old. You know what pain is from a very young age, mm-hmm. you know? So she knows that she's suffering. And doctors know, you know, I've had so many conversations with psychiatrists and therapists that have lamented and commiserated because there is no cure. And so all you can do is therapy, talk therapy, or, you know, like you said, DBT, CBT, medication. When you run out of medications where I am, it's just too much. it's absolutely too much. And I get it. I absolutely get it. And she's lucky. Well, I'm not going to say lucky, but she just happens to be in the Netherlands where it's legal.
Yeah, and it's done under a physician.
Right.
So she's getting, and then, like I was saying earlier, when I was doing a little bit of research, there is a criteria that has to be met before it's even, you know, approved or, so, again, I think that it just comes down to, I mean, because it seems like the Netherlands got it together. They seem to, you know what I mean? Like, understand the variations of suffering and pain, and quote-unquote terminal illnesses. Like, it seems like they understand that it can be physical and mental. Yes. So I think that's why it comes down to, because that's true. It's a fact. That's true. I think that's true. So I think the argument in this is more personal. It's more about personal beliefs and feelings and not really, again, the fact. The truth is that it can be physical and mental.
And this goes across the, like, when you're talking about dying by suicide, the cruel things that people say after someone dies by suicide, you took the easy way out. You're going to hell. How could you do this to your loved ones? And so on and so forth and so on and so forth. And so it doesn't matter whether it was assisted or not assisted or whatever. People are, like you said, people are not going to understand. They are not going to understand. You know, Robin Williams, like, you know, I've been talking about Robin Williams all my life. And it's like, oh, he's a comedian, you know, and, you know, he's entertaining people and laughing or whatever. But his depression was so bad. And then it turned out that he did have an illness, you know? And so we don't know what people are going through and what people are struggling with. And the Netherlands, like you said, they got their shit together. They understand that the mental, the physical, it's all together. And that, you know, it's not just, you know, my primary care physician is going to come to my house on lunchtime. No, you know, it says it's a paperwork. You know, the government has the procedure and the physician, you know, has to be cleared and all sorts of stuff. And like you said earlier, did you say that if it comes out that it's not?
Oh, yeah, I said that. So any death that's considered unnatural has to be reported.
Okay.
And to some, like a board. And then if it doesn't fit in that criteria, then the physician can be persecuted. So, okay. I mean, it seems that they're very thorough in their process from what I read. I just think, okay, I do have a question. Just playing a little devil's advocate, I'm just asking. Because I did see that the youngest is 12. And how do we feel about a 12-year-old making that decision? See, now, maybe that's where I get a little conflicted. I don't know. Like, 12...
Well, okay, think about...
Now I sound like a hypocrite. Because now I don't know.
No, I'm not. No, you don't.
No, I really do.
Because it is conflicted. Because you consider 12 to still be a baby. You consider 12 to not be able to make decisions. But what did that 12-year-old go through?
You're right.
What is that 12-year-old living with?
Suffering.
You know, so it was a 12-year-old in the Netherlands?
Well, that's the law, that they can be.
Oh, they can be.
That's the youngest.
12. Okay. Yeah.
So the earliest is 12. And they have to have, if they're 12, of course, they have to have parental consent up until the age that they're 16.
Wow. Yeah, I don't know what I would say if one of my children, you know, that's came what to I'm me. Saying. But, you know, you know if your child is struggling. You know if your child is suffering. So what if it is too much for a 12-year-old? You know?
Yeah.
What if you have cases of the depression comes from abuse? chronic abuse from the baby to 12.
Yeah.
You know, and so you have the depression and the PTSD and the, you know, because we know that trauma turns into other things, you know, and so you don't know what the 12-year-old mind is thinking. You know, that's why when people say that 12-year-olds can't, they don't have the brain power to make decisions. There are 12-year-olds that are taking care of their siblings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are 12-year-olds that, you know, are running households. Hell, I was doing it at 12, you know. So I don't know. On that part, Tony, I'm conflicted also, you know, only because I have babies. So I'm trying to wonder, you know, what I would have done if one of you would have came to me and said that.
Like, I don't know. I would have to hear. I need to hear from a parent. I need to hear from a parent of a child that young that said that to them. And maybe they agreed to it or they gave consent. I just.
Now, again, I didn't see any through anything that a 12-year-old has done it, has completely, you know, done it. So I don't know. We're going to have to keep researching that one. But as of 2022, 115 mentally ill people have died by assisted suicide, euthanasia.
And honestly, that's not a large number.
That's not, because they said that it's like 8,300 people have died by euthanasia as of 2022 in the Netherlands, but only 115 of them were mentally ill. The other people were terminal, physical, older. So that's not a large number, you know, when you think about how many people
it really isn't there. It really isn't a large number.
Go ahead.
No. Go ahead.
Canada, like I said, they have assisted suicide euthanasia policies in place only for physical terminal illnesses. And they were supposed to legalize it for mentally ill people this year. And they decided to delay it until 2027. And there's a woman I read her, and she's, I actually have a quote from her, but this was in the US newspaper. She said that she had her date set and everything for this year. She said, because it's like living with these mental illnesses, it's like running a marathon, but there's no finish line.
It really is.
And that, like, I always say a hamster on a wheel, you know, like it's just never ending. So she is very upset that they decided to delay it, because now she has to continue living like this.
Yeah.
And, you know, I get it, you know, the psychological field, very mixed feelings about it. But I think that people that are on the inside understand, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
Especially if you are a doctor, you know, especially if you've ever been in a psych ward, you know, you can see that this is not, it's not minor.
It's not, and it's not black and white either. It's just, it's, I don't know. I don't know. I'm not conflicted. But.
So you're conflicted about the 12-year-old, but you're not conflicted about an adult.
No. Yes, that's correct. But that makes me sound like a hypocrite. Because if a 12-year-old, if I said that the 28-year-old is suffering, who am I to discredit the 12-year-old suffering? So that's where I'm conflicted. But it does make me a hypocrite. I know.
Well, they were all hypocrites.
Because I'm just trying to think, like, what was I thinking at 12? Or,
Okay, so when do you think that you started feeling like depression creeping in? At what age?
Well, that's what I was going to say. I was going to say it wasn't long after that I right. felt like, specifically for me, 13, 14, I feel like was an age. It got definitely worse in high school, but yeah, 13, 14. So it wasn't long after 12. I just don't know.
And I was 10 years old, and the psychologist was taking me out of class every week to have a session at 10. So that means that, you know, my depression, mental illness was very obvious before 12 years old.
That's true. But were you like developmentally like advanced enough to make that type of decision at 10 or at 12?
Is your brain? You want to know an honest answer?
Yeah.
I would have made that decision at 12.
At 12.
You know why? Because here we are. Right, and I'm in my 50s, and I'm still living with these mental illnesses. I'm not going to say that there weren't good times. I have joy and, you know, along the way, but I will say that it has been a painful journey. And at 12 years old, number one, yes, I was mature enough to think about something like that. And number two, if I knew that I would be suffering like this, hell yeah. Yeah. You know, hell yeah. Yeah. I mean, of course, the flip side is I never would have had my babies. I never would have, you know, traveled or, you know, whatever. But I get it. I really get it. You know, especially if you are living with a mental illness and your environment is fucked up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No support. Emotional abuse, sexual abuse, whatever is going on in your world, plus the mental illness.
Yeah, and I guess at that age, you can't even, what can you do? You don't have you're not independent enough to leave that type of environment anyway. That
exactly.
So that may be the only way out for some. I get it. Well, okay. That makes sense. Would you consider it now at this age?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not quiet about feeling like that because it's so, I don't think people, like I said, people do not understand how painful it is. You know, it hurts not to be able to finish a thought. It hurts not being able to, feel happiness. You know, like there's no jumping out of bed in the morning for me. Uh-uh. You know, there's no rainbows. There's no, you know, and there is no, like, I had a psychiatrist appointment last week, and she's going through the list of medications, and these medications, just that I could remember, we're not talking about the medications that I started taking at 25 years old. So for 30 years, imagine how much medication I've taken. I've taken every medication out there, pretty much. And there's no end in sight. There's no scientist saying we're going to cure this tomorrow, you know, and I know this because trials do I do? You know, mm-hmm. that I'm always in trials and sitting on boards and advisory groups and all that stuff. And I know that there is no cure on the horizon. Now there's ketamine treatments, but I don't know anything about that really. And there's different forms of therapy, but if you ask me right now, yes. And that's why I am not conflicted with her feeling like that. because I know that there's no end in sight.
Okay.
And I think that, you know, people have to respect that. You know, people have to understand that you can talk about death. You can say, I don't want to be here anymore and not have a plan. Like, I don't have anything written out. You know, I've never come up with a plan on how to leave the earth. But I think about it, you know, because this is something that I always say, and I know that you have said it and the world has said it. People are not the a large majority, I will say, because, you know, somebody will say, oh, blah, blah, blah. A large majority of people that die by suicide are not doing it because they want to die. They are doing it for peace.
They just want it to stop.
They want the voices to stop. They want the pain to stop. They want the hamster to slow down. They want the nausea to slow down. They want the, you know, the weight gain to stop. Like, they want it all, you know, or people making fun of you, or, you know, not having anybody to talk to, not having, they want all of this to stop. They want to be in a place where there is peace.
That's it.
And people have to understand that, you know, it's no different than, you know, when people say you have a whole family. Say there's a man and he has a family and he has to worry about going to work. He has to worry about providing for his family. He has to worry about, oh, his parents are getting older. And so he has to worry about taking care of his parents. And then he has to worry about, you know, maintaining the house or whatever. So when he sits on the train to commute to work, this is what's going through his head. This is what's going through his head. Now imagine that times 100, 24 hours a day.
Yep. And nonstop. Because it don't stop when you sleep.
It doesn't.
And if it does, it's going to start back up as soon as you, it's very hard. It's nonstop. It's continuous work.
I want to ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you the same question. Because you're in her age group.
Right. Would I consider it right now, where I'm at right now? Not where I'm at right now. I think that it's far from easy. But I think that I'm a little past that, but I've been there, but I've made it past that. And that's just with the combination, I think, of the proper medication, psychiatric appointments, support, lifestyle change, things like that. But I don't know, without that, who knows? Who knows? Like, if my psychiatrist said to me, Tony, listen, there ain't really nothing else we can do. Like, you're going to feel like this forever. These medications are not, I don't know what I would do. So
now, what do you think is one of your most painful symptoms? And this is not just today, this is from what you can remember.
For me, it's the thought. The my mind never stops going, and it's very exhausting. And I have two. So the thought, and then the mood. So I just, you never know. I don't necessarily have triggers or anything. I'm sure there are things that trigger, but I could just wake up. And I'm never in one mood all throughout the day. So I think that's the most my mind never stops going, and it's very exhausting. So. And it's ongoing, and it's
right.
It's, I guess you could use the word debilitating.
It is.
It really is.
It is. It is.
So I don't know. If you just get used to it, or
we're told that we have to live with it. You know, yeah. like you have to maintain. You have to go to work every day. You have to take care of your family. You know, I raised you guys, you know, in the throes of some of my worst periods. But I had to do it. So I think a lot of people are just like, well, you know, euthanasia is not an option, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm not thinking about doing it myself. So I'm going to have to just work through it.
And it's hard work. I feel like every second of every minute of every hour, it's work. It's work. Just this morning, I said that it's very hard. I said it was hard for me to do the things. And by things, I mean get out of bed. I sat at the sink for at least 10 minutes before I brushed my teeth. I sat outside the shower before I could shower. Like, once I do it, I'm better. But I literally talk myself up. Okay, Tony, if you do this, just get this over with, then you this, then you this. It's hard to do the things. And these are things that are they just come natural to most people or to some people.
Right.
Right. It's just sometimes it's just hard to do the things. And tomorrow I may wake up and it may be the easiest thing to do. But this morning it was just hard to do the things. And I don't know why. So you just, I guess
but
you
that's just the, that's the way it is. You know, it's oh, yeah. just impractical. It's, what's the word? You just never know.
Oh, unpredictable.
Know? Unpredictable. The monster is a bitch. You know, and I oh, actually yeah. I just posted that on social media. I said I am doing all of these things because I had a meeting today and then a helpline call and then you know. And mm-hmm. I said I do all of these things to stay out of my head, mm-hmm. but then I get upset and anxious and depressed and overwhelmed because I have so many things to do.
Yeah. I think that's how I am with work.
Right.
I think right. I've been like that with pretty much every job that I've had. I probably throw myself into it to kind of like get away from your thoughts.
Now this says that she's physically healthy. So I guess that's another reason why it's so complicated. Because physically she's fine. But that's another thing that people don't understand, that a mental illness can create a physical illness.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because your body stops working. You know, if your brain stops working, then there's parts of your body that shut down. You know, or if you're so depressed, you can't move, you know, or you can't exercise, or you sit in a chair all day, then that's going to contribute to back problems and weight gain.
Joint problems.
Right.
Fatigue is a big one. That's a huge physical symptom, I think.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know. I just want people to understand, like, it's painful. I don't judge anybody. And I don't think that I've ever, as long as I can remember, I don't think that if I heard of someone going to find their peace, I didn't judge them. And maybe it was right. because I understood, you know, but I think that the people that, you know, oh, well, the people that say you're going to go to hell, I'm in hell now.
Right.
Hell ain't got nothing on what I'm living with every day, you know?
You're right. I don't think I've judged either. If I've heard, if anything, I just feel sympathy.
Right.
Immediately. It's nothing more than that. I was never one to think that it was selfish or anything like that. So, because, yeah, I guess because we just know. But
and
you
of
also
course,
don't wait.
No, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Ma.
No, I was saying that, of course, you don't want to leave your family, you know, and of course, it seems selfish that you did leave your family, your loved ones, and left. But like I said, there are people that leave every day for physical reasons. So why do you judge someone that leaves because their mind is broken and hurt?
And at the end of the day, you know, your loved one, I get it. Again, I get it. They don't have to live with that. Like I said, so many people are still here living for those around them. And they're like in agony. So I don't look at it as selfish. I can't look at it as selfish. Because yeah, I think that... But
no, go ahead. You think that what? You said it's not selfish.
I don't think it's selfish. Because I said that I think so many people are here for everybody else. And kind of in a way, what they're doing, assisted or not, is selfless. Because you're not thinking about anybody else. And I'm not trying to glorify, because I feel like saying selfless is like glorifying it. But if we're going to say, like, if, yeah, I guess so. I guess so, because this is the one instance where you're not thinking about everybody else. Like, you're worried about your pain. You're trying to take care of yourself. So I don't know.
Do you think that there will ever be a day, and I know that, you know, we're moving on in time, but I don't know if you know about Dr. Kevorkian, if you've ever read about it, but I believe it was Dr. Jack Kevorkian years ago, he did assisted suicide for a terminally ill person.
Uh-huh.
And at first it was one person. I think that it was more than one person, but he ended up being convicted for it because that it's not legal in the United States. And so as far as the United States is concerned, he murdered these people. And that's what he was taken to trial for. So what do you think, that'll be one of my last big questions. What do you think would happen if it became legal in the United States?
Let me tell you something. Listen, the U.S. could not handle it. I mean, I think it would cause, it would be a shambles. And I think it's just because we have a hard time taking out our personal beliefs when it comes to stuff like that. I think that might be the end. I don't even know. I don't think we can. I don't think we could do it.
We're not ready.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. We're not on the Netherlands level.
but here's the thing. So we're in the U.S. and there are constant fights about a 12-year-old can decide what gender they want to be.
Right.
So why can't a 12-year-old decide that they're in too much pain to go on?
Again, personal. It's personal because, again, if you can say that a 12-year-old is capable of deciding their, you know, their gender, if that's what your argument is, then you can't flip when it comes to a different topic. You know, if you're saying 12 is old enough, then 12 is old enough. So that's what that's when the hypocrite, like me, like the hypocrites come in. And I think where personal beliefs come in. Like, you're worried about what you would do and what you do, but you're not. That's why we're not ready. Look at the stuff they're trying to implement now.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
I don't think that I would live to see the day to do it. That something like that would be put into place. Yeah, I don't think it'll happen. And I want to say in the end that this young lady, this is not something that she woke up and decided to do.
Right.
You know, she has planned it. There's advanced directives that you have to sign. I talk about psychiatric advanced directives every day. And what they are is they give a family member directives on what to do in case of a psychiatric episode. So I would fill one out and put you on it and sign it, both of us sign it. So that way, when I'm in the hospital, the doctors know that they can talk to you.
Okay.
And so, you know, the Netherlands has directives in place, you know, so this is not something that she woke up on Monday and said, I'm going to do this on Friday. Right. You know, she is 28. She is under the care of a psychiatrist. She did make, you know, talk to her loved ones about it. She has planned, you know, her afterlife. So I want to make it clear that from everything that I read, and I don't know how much you read, but from everything that I read, this is not a whim
for this young lady. No, she even said that she was even saying that she is a little scared. I saw a quote, yes. Because she's scared of the unknown, dying. Of what happens right. After. So again, I'm sure that she has thought about that. All I can say, I really hope that she finds, and I hope that, you know, that's it. Like, truly, I hope she finds peace. That's it. It sucks, though, that she has to be like, first of all, imagine already deciding to do this, it being in the news, and then you got to deal with what everybody is saying. Like, please. Isn't that too much?
And I don't know, like, how did this, well, it came out in one of the papers there, the Free Press. So she did a small town interview and it turned into this. Now it's on People Magazine and, you know, social media and stuff like that. And I'm sad that her name is in it. The town that she lives in is in it. You know, the only thing that's not here is the doctor's name. So, you know, I'm going to follow it. I'm going to follow this, story and see how it turns out, because like you said, I'm sure now she's going to be bombarded, you know, but I feel the same way. I understand what she's going through and I respect what she's doing. It's very brave. You know, that's another thing. You know, we think, or not we, but people say, oh, it's the easy way out. Hell no, it's not the easy way out. Assisted or unassisted. You know.
None of this is easy.
You know, the mindset that you have to have, the strength that you have to go through with that kind of plan. So I respect her decision. I respect her bravery. I respect her thoroughness. And I am the same way. I hope that peace is on the other side for her. And I only wish that the peace that she's going to find, that we could find it here.
Right.
You know, that more of us can find it here, because it's so noisy. It's so noisy.
Uh-huh.
So give us a last thought, Miss Tony.
I mean, other than... Well, I came on here one way, left a hypocrite, so that's really all I gotta say.
You're not a hypocrite.
But I think this is a very, it's a good topic. I think there's a lot of opinions on it, but I think they're all valid opinions. I get it. So yeah, thank you for having me.
And thank you for being brave enough to share, you know, to come on. Thank you for, of course, indulging your crazy mommy, but for being brave enough. And I tell you girls this all the time, that you don't understand how brave you are, because in different, always in different settings and different ways, you guys share your testimony or you help someone else. Even if it's just a sentence, you guys have always been very brave with what you're dealing with. Even in your relationship, like I've always respected that, you know, you were able to share that. So, you know, thank you for coming on and sharing your story with us and sharing bits and pieces of your story with us. Thank you, because someone in your age group is going to listen to this and they're going to say, well, okay, well, you know, she's young and cute and hip. So, you know, if she goes through that.
Not it, Ma.
You're hip. So thank you so much, Tony, for coming on and talking with us. And you're going to come back again a million times. Oh, like I said, Tony is on the board of DWD. So she, a lot of the stuff that you see me put out, her and Lauren are my sidekicks, and they're helping me write. They help me write speeches and articles and different things like that. So always remember that my babies are a huge part of what I do. Very supportive, very loving. And I love you guys for always being supportive of not just DWD, but of mommy.
Yeah, we love you too. Okay.
So guys, thank you. Thank you so much. We had a little longer episode today, but you guys know when I have guests, you're just going to talk and talk and talk. When my last guest said that they felt like they were, you know, in the kitchen, in the living room, just chatting, you know, and that's how I love for people to feel. So, you know, but thank you guys for listening. Thank you for your support. If you don't already, go follow me everywhere. Diva with Depression. You can find me. TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook. I'm everywhere. So you can go visit me. Go to divawithdepression.com and subscribe. And go in there. You have access to the episodes that I've done. I'm up to, Tony, this is number 76.
The podcast?
77, I believe. Yes. Uh-oh. You're number 77.
Uh-oh. I think 77 is a lucky number, dance. Right?
I think so. Look, y'all can't see my dance.
She's dancing.
I'm dancing. So go to sleepingwithdepression.com and you can read the transcripts, you can read show notes, and there are resources everywhere. You know, I have a whole section for resources. So if you or someone you know is struggling, you can go there and get the resources or reach out to me personally, and I will get back to you. Thank you to Illumination Media and Technology, my tech genius. Guys, please stay well. Please, please, please remember that you are not alone, and do something to find some peace. Okay? Mm. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Sometimes realize that